in a long, long time. I'm good at rocking, it's so hard to find, baby.
Welcome back to News and Views. Joel Heitkamp, your host. In studio with us is United States Senator Heidi Heitkamp. Heidi, good to have you on News and Views.
It's good to be here, Joel.
Yeah, well.
You're kind of fired up today.
I just, this person says it really well. Okay, get this. You did this job when I was in the legislature for me. Remember? You
had I did.
It said, I only agree with you about 5 to 10% of the time. So obviously this guy doesn't have my picture on his wall at home, you know?
Unless he's throwing darts at it.
Yeah, unless he's right, which is his right. Go ahead. There's a big gap. If you hit that, it's 50 points. It says, I only agree with you about 5 to 10% of the time, but Clive Bundy issue, you are 100% right. He's a crook. He hasn't paid for his rights, and all these other people that think the governments of the wrong know he was in the wrong for not paying. So, and that's the whole, and I won't drag you into this because that isn't why I asked you to come in here, but this whole rush to the front of this ant, you work on a daily basis with Rand Paul. Mm-hmm. Are you ever tempted to walk over there and just look at him and say, Rand, what were you thinking about?
Well, I mean, we haven't had a chance to talk about this issue, and we talk about things that we tend to agree about, so...
So you only talk when you agree? You don't walk over there and say, you know, by the way,
he's kind of unmovable, you know. I talk to people I don't know. I mean, you know, it depends on what your base is.
Getting the nomination and winning are two different things, and this guy is running for president.
Yeah, and it's interesting because Rand Paul has been along with Paul Ryan has been really reaching out to the minority community, doing more. I mean, there's tons of national stories about it, and this is a big setback from that effort, I think.
Yeah. All right. I want to talk to you about the meeting in Castleton yesterday. Mm-hmm. This was set up by you and your office. Senator Hovind, tell people what happened here.
Well, I mean, after the event, we had a huge in Castleton and Lac-Mégantic. And, you know, I always include that because it's important that we understand, you know, how this is an international issue. This is an issue that involves all communities across the country and across Canada. We sat down with the secretary and had kind of a brainstorming meeting with the industry, with the oil and gas industry, with the railroads, and with all of the various regulators. And at that meeting, Secretary Fox agreed to come out to North Dakota into Castleton and talk about what they were doing. We thought that was only appropriate given the risk that Castleton took and given the great events involving the first responders. And so he agreed to do it, but I think one of the things that helps when you have someone come out is that they actually see it at the ground level. They actually have a chance to talk to the mayors. They have a chance to talk to the first responders, and I think it reinforces and ratchets up their interest in getting the job done.
It also shows the risk. It shows how close this was to where Castleton is. It shows the type of equipment they have to fight something like this, which is inadequate. Mm-hmm. And it shows the fact that these are a bunch of guys which on any given day could be putting a crop in the field and their beeper goes off and they say, rush to the Castleton Firehouse. We got one to put out.
Yeah, one thing that didn't get talked about last night is the fortuitous event that one of the trainees on the grain train actually was a firefighter up at the Air Force up in Grand Forks. And I know those guys. They're some of the best trained firefighters in the state. And so he was able to know exactly what kind of equipment to get and be able to pull the pin and stop further explosions right in these cars. And
he's a real hero.
Jeff Anderson. I think so. And he didn't get mentioned yesterday. I think we were all pretty strapped for time, but I want to mention him today. You know, he doesn't get talked about. And I think Burlington Northern was a little nervous at first because they thought maybe he was a cowboy, didn't know what he was doing, you know, and they don't want people rushing into fires if they don't know what they're doing. But the response from the train personnel, from those railroad guys, was absolutely excellent as well. And so they were first responders on the scene as well as the Castleton Fire Department and the whole Cass County effort.
So why in my inbox this morning when I'm checking my email Was there some Canadian U.S. fight? Did you or somebody bring up, an anti-Canadian sentiment in this meeting?
No. What happened was the Canadian officials have now made a positive statement about how they're going to phase out the 111s. And I think the mayor of Fargo rightfully said, does that mean that those 111s, if the Canadians are phasing them out, that those 111s now will be pushed down and we won't see as much progress in the United States in phasing out the 111s? And so we heard three things. The first thing was from the administrator, PHMSA administrator, and from the DOT, Secretary Fox, that no, that's not going to happen. These regulations are going to be harmonized. You also heard from Senator Hovind, who responded saying, you know what, the Canadians haven't phased them out. They're in the rulemaking process like we are, and it's 3 years from their finalization of their rule, so we're not off kilter with the Canadians. And then I made the point, and this is true, these cars move in and out. You can't say, we're gonna put it in a 111, and then when we get to the border, we're gonna put it in a 1232. And so they're gonna have to be harmonized by the sheer virtue of how that moves on the rails in and out of Canada back into the United States. And you know, we're gonna have to have harmonization. But I think there was some frustration expressed by Congressman Kramer that our regulators were not as aggressive as the Canadian regulators.
So that's where it came from. That's why Congressman Kramer.
Yeah, the other issue that came up regarding the Canadians is their now order, emergency order, that you have to haul more grain. And if you haul more grain, does that mean that we're going to haul more oil in North Dakota and in and out of North Dakota, and the Canadian producers get their grain hauled? And I think Burlington Northern pretty much said that's not going to happen either. So, you know, we're waiting to find out. I've asked the Canadian embassy to give us kind of a rundown on what that emergency order means. We're waiting for that information. But I'm more concerned about moving those ag products and how we're going to make that happen here in the short term.
There are those who say that part of the problem with all of this is Warren Buffett's close connection to the Democratic Party, and that we're not getting anything done with the rail issues because the Democrats just love them. True or not?
Oh, I think that's a ridiculous thing. I think if anything, I will tell you, you can love or hate the Burlington Northern, but they have really stepped up on this safety concern. They do not want trains exploding on their tracks. I mean, that's just common sense. And so even before the PHMSA has moved on a new tank car design, they've already begun the process of going beyond the 1232s and ordering new tanks that I think are going to be the new standards, with a greater thermal shell, greater jacket width for the carbon steel. And so I think Burlington Northern ultimately is going to take the responsibility. And the one thing that Matt Rose did say yesterday when we were talking about the three tiers, prevention, mitigation if there is a derailment, and first responders. What Matt said, prevention, a direct quote, that's on us. We got to keep the train on the track. And so, you know, positive train control, using technologies for instant response when we see a fault in that, you know, every time a car goes over there, they could be measuring and monitoring the quality of that track. And I think we're looking at deploying that kind of new technology. In fact, that new technology exists in some of the engines of the Burlington Northern. And so, you know, keeping the train on the track, making sure that we're going at appropriate speeds, making sure that we're avoiding derailments, and then taking a look at limiting the consequences if there is a derailment, and then absolutely providing training and equipment to first responders.
Well, we always say when you get in studio, take calls, 237-5948, 1-800-880-5346. If you call, you can get through and speak to Senator Heidi Heitkamp. Let's go to the Weather Center and talk to Terry Spees, find out what the weekend weather forecast has for us. Terry.
Well, Joel, I'd say enjoy it.
You're on News and Views. Go ahead, John.
Thank you, Joel. Hey, Heidi.
Uh-huh.
I've called your office a few times and stuff on health care, and with the way this propane has been going up on price and everything. And I think, Heidi, you should, all senators and the representatives, they should answer the phone at their office sometimes and hear the people's frustrations
instead
of your help all the time.
That's interesting.
Well,
that is.
I mean,
thank you, John.
I did actually answer the phone during the shutdown.
Oh, you did?
Yeah,
huh?
I did, so because we didn't have enough folks. And that, you know, it's an interesting idea. And, you know, a lot of times we don't get a lot of calls at various parts of the day, so we'd have to probably say, I'm going to answer the phone so people know when to call. But, you know, the point there is that I had a woman who called and said that she was really disappointed in me because I didn't sit and listen to 21 hours of Ted Cruz speech. And
she expected you to sit there through the whole filibuster?
Yeah. And I said, you know, what I did.
You've read Dr. Seuss.
Well,
I was there.
I mean, I just yeah, you were actually.
Yeah.
I read it to you.
Right.
But my point is that you can't be everywhere and you've got really important things to do, like attending committee hearings and markups and, you know, going and meeting with federal officials, DOJ. You know, so it's how you evaluate your time. And we certainly hope that we do enough outreach to citizens, but it's an interesting idea and we'll try it out.
Well, he was making reference to the propane shortage.
Yeah.
You must be getting a lot of calls from farmers about lack of fertilizer, lack of propane. A lot of guys paid through the nose for propane last year.
Right. Well, and you know, we had the double whammy of a corn crop that needed a little bit more drying than was usual.
Not a little,
and so that
a
yeah,
lot.
A lot of drying. And so you saw a lot of propane being used there. And then you saw people kind of getting caught with a very cold winter where propane across the country went much higher. And so I think now that you've had that experience, I think you need to figure out how you're going to stockpile propane so that you can meet the needs of communities and assume that you're going to have a cold winter.
That's why my buddies at TRS Industries are putting the divider curtains in your shop. Well, I got a good buddy who's farms in the Comstock area. He said you wouldn't believe what it costs.
I think the other thing, though, too, Joel, is one of the things that I've talked about is how can we expand the network of natural gas pipelines. You know, we've taken rural water out to the rural areas. We've taken, you know, highways out there. We've taken telecom out there. Shouldn't we maybe talk about this natural gas development that we have and how we can get natural gas to communities like Winter?
Trying to get my buddy JJ out of a job? He hauls this to farms.
It's not always going to be accessible that way, but we ought to look at building out that infrastructure.
Kathy, you're on with Heidi Heitkamp.
Hi, Heidi. I just want to thank you very much. My 18-year-old granddaughter just visited out there in D.C. with the close-up program.
Uh-huh.
And when she came home, that was the very first thing she told me. Grandma, you can't believe Heidi Heitkamp actually talked to us and asked us if we had any questions.
Oh.
So know that meant a lot to the kids and to the families of the children that you visited with. I want people to know that you do take time.
Thank you so much. I just love it when the close-up kids come. And, you know, they always ask the toughest questions. When I go to high schools, they ask the toughest questions, the close-up kids. And what I really try and do with those discussions is try and get them to think about, you know, whether they could be sitting in the United States Senate seat, whether they're willing to step up and kind of pursue that kind of leadership. But beyond that, what do they want to do with their lives? What do they want the country to be in 50 years going forward? And really try to walk through those processes with them. And they're always delightful and they're always challenging, let me tell you. It's not, what did you have for dinner? It's, you know, what do you think about this issue and that issue?
237-5948, 1-800-880-5346. Jim, you're on News and Views.
Yeah, hi, Heidi.
Hey, Jim.
Say, I'm a registered nurse. I work in an emergency room. And one of the problems that we have is the gross amount of unnecessary and abused emergency room visits.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understand, it costs the country like close to $40 billion per biennium for unnecessary emergency department visits. And from what I understand, the Obama solution has not helped. It's actually made the problem worse because people are now using the emergency department instead of setting up clinic appointments. They're using it as their primary care provider. And the government has tied our hands to do anything about it. We can't just say, sorry, this is an emergency department. You've got a sore throat. You need to go make an appointment. We're forced by the government to have to assess and treat these people. And no one seems to want to address this problem. It's overwhelming our emergency departments in this country and has for quite some time.
Well, I think that the theory is that once people get insurance, people who are uninsured, they'll have other ways to get health care rather than walking in the emergency room. Now, I will tell you.
Have you heard from others that this is happening too?
Well, it's always been happening because we have a federal law. He's right. We have a federal law that says if somebody comes into the emergency room, you have to treat them. You can't refuse anyone at the emergency room because they don't have an ability to pay. And so you can say, look, this isn't an emergency problem. You can go get your sore throat checked out someplace else. But there's always risk in doing that.
But Jim right in saying that the new Affordable Care Act has made it?
No, that I don't agree with. I think that this has been a long-term problem. And in fact, the getting people on insurance is supposed to help prevent this. Because when people say we don't have universal health care, we do. It's called the emergency room. And if we're going to fix the high cost of that care, we're going to have to try and get people to use health care at an appropriate level and not at insurance. Now, what I will tell you is that what concerns me is the growing number of people who are using emergency rooms for mental health care when there's nothing any emergency room can do. I sat at a table with health care providers here in Fargo, and what one ambulance driver told me is that there's one guy here in Fargo who is on task to have 133 ambulance rides to the emergency room. He has a mental health condition. They can't treat him in the emergency room, but yet they have to pick him up. And those are the kinds of things that we need to say common sense has to prevail. We cannot let people take the system and use the system that way. Plus, we're not helping this guy. 133, you know, he's on track of ambulance rides to the emergency room. What do you think that costs?
So you're heading back to D.C.?
No, I'm going to Arizona. I'm going to be on a panel with Mrs. McCain and with Amy Klobuchar on human trafficking at the McCain Institute. So be spending the weekend with the McCains.
You and Klobuchar are hanging out a lot lately,
aren't you? And me and Amy, me and Cindy McCain, who is absolutely a wonderful woman.
Interesting. Very interesting. All right. Well, thanks for coming in. Thanks for taking phone calls.
You bet, Joel.
Appreciate you doing that. When we come back, all you folks on hold, we'll take your calls. She won't be here. She's got to go catch a plane.